The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
So just an encouragement before I start that when you receive a Hosho, a Dharma talk, it's not like a lecture. You don't have to pay close attention. You don't have to take mental notes. You don't have to follow every move in it, but staying in your upright position, staying in your Zazen posture and in your Zazen frame of mind and heart, just letting it wash over you. And if one phrase or one word touches you or provokes you or inspires you, then you have received everything you need from this talk. This koan is from the Book of Serenity, case number 35. Luopu's obeisance. Luopu went to Jiashan and without bowing stood facing him. Jiashan said, "A chicken in a phoenix nest, not the same class. Go away." Luopu said, "I've come from far away, hearing about your virtue. Please give me one touch." Jiashan said, "There is no you before my eyes, and there is no me here." Luopu shouted. Jiashan said, "Stop it. Don't be so hasty. Clouds and moons are the same. Valleys and mountains are different from each other. It's not impossible to cut out the tongues of everyone on earth, but how can you make a tongueless person speak?" Luopu said nothing. Jiashan hit him. With this, Luopu became Jiashan's student. So as I've been sitting with this interesting koan, as I've been letting it wash over me, I've been appreciating how much in some ways, and there are many ways to look at this koan, but I've been appreciating how much it evokes two different approaches to the Dharma, two different traditions of Dharma practice and Dharma teaching, both of them represented by the two main figures in this koan. And not in the way of raising one above the other, not in the way of endorsing one and demoting the other, but simply in a search to find what's most effective for a certain student at a certain time. And this is very relevant to our Boundless Way tradition, because we have several lineage streams that meet in Boundless Way Zen, that come from the three teachers that founded Boundless Way Zen. And so we have various options. We don't all have the same practice. We're not trying to all follow a single model or a single lineage tradition. Some of us may work with koans and go through the entire koan curriculum. Some of us may prefer to sit and follow the breath and attend to the posture, and may not work with koans at all. Some of us may work with the Wado from our Korean lineage and just sit with something like, "What is this?" Or, "Is anything missing now?" Or, "Who is the one breathing?" None of these is superior to the other, and there are others too, of course. All of these are skillful means. Which one is right for you? Which is right for Luopu? That's what this koan is saying to me. And let me start by looking at it near the end. It's not impossible to cut out the tongues of everyone on earth, but how can you make a tongueless person speak? How can you make a tongueless person speak? When it comes to expressing the Dharma, which I'm trying to do now, we're all tongueless persons. None of us can say it. None of us can do it justice. It's impossible to convey it in words. Our tradition, if we go back to its legendary founding, when Shakyamuni passed Dharma transmission on to Mahakashyapa, it's referred to, the teaching is referred to as a special transmission outside tradition, not put in words or phrases, not expressible in words or phrases. And so again, there we are, tongueless. You'll recall that the Buddha did not give a little Dharma talk to Mahakashyapa, but he held up a lotus flower. That was the teaching. There is teaching with words and teaching without words. And some lineage traditions tend to make more of one or the other. And Luo Pu is an interesting figure. Luo Pu is from a lineage tradition, although it won't become his ultimate lineage tradition. But he has been studying with Lin Ji. And we read Lin Ji together a little while ago. And it was Lin Ji that said, "Open your mouth and you've already missed the mark." This is a tradition that really, we call it the Lin Ji school, or in Japanese, the Rinzai school. But really its impulse goes back to an earlier teacher, Matsu. And Matsu is the one who introduced shouts and blows into Zen teaching. Not because he was a particularly angry or sadistic guy, but because he found that this was an expedient way of getting through to his students, who may have been caught in the web of words, who may have been reading sutra after sutra and wanting to debate fine doctrinal points and missing what was right there in front of them, what's right here. And this very much was Lin Ji's approach. And Luo Pu sat with Lin Ji for many years and in fact was one of his favorite students, and had already received Dharma transmission once from Lin Ji when he came to Jiashan. He did not need Dharma transmission from Jiashan, and yet he needed something. He needed something he didn't have already. Not because there was anything missing in Lin Ji's teaching, but maybe it wasn't exactly right for Jiashan, Luo Pu. Luo Pu had lived for, I think, a year on the same mountain of Jiashan. What mountain would that be? Mount Jia. Jiashan is another of our mountain monks, and Shan, as you know, means mountain. And Jiashan was named for the mountain that he taught at, because he became so identified with it. One of our many Shans. Luo Pu was not yet called Luo Pu. He would eventually establish his monastery on a different mountain called Mount Luo Pu. So both of them are mountain monks, as so many of our ancestors were, as some of us are. So Luo Pu lived on this mountain, not that far from Jiashan's monastery, and never came to see Jiashan, never came to pay his respects, never came to receive any teaching. And Jiashan sensed that there was something wrong, sensed that there was something amiss. And so he sent one of his students, there's a little bit longer version of this story, he sent one of his students to Luo Pu with a letter. And the student emissary bowed to Luo Pu and gave him the letter, and Luo Pu just put it down without reading it, and then held his hand out like, "Is there something more?" And then dismissed the monk. And the monk came back and told all this to Jiashan, who said, "If Luo Pu reads the letter within 3 days, he'll come to me. Otherwise, he's lost." So Luo Pu really felt something was seriously amiss. Jiashan felt there was something seriously amiss with Luopu. And after 3 days, Luopu did show up. And then our koan begins. So here's Luopu, who's from this tradition, who's gotten it really from the horse's mouth, from Lin Ji himself, who's gotten this teaching that is based on the teaching without words, that's based on shouts and blows and slamming the floor with a stick and so on. These things that look to us maybe in retrospect like Zen hijinks, and yet were very serious teaching methods, and still are for some teachers. And so he comes up, and instead of saying anything, he just stands there. And he doesn't bow, which seems to be his way of saying, yeah, here I am, but I don't need anything from you. We don't know what the letter said, but it's kind of like, I received your invitation, and no thanks. And so he stands there silently. This is also in the Lin Ji tradition, which is a kind of a tradition that prizes Dharma combat. And in the stories about Lin Ji and his students, there's a lot of this getting in someone's face, coming up to a teacher and without saying anything, shouting. And then what does the teacher do? And then what's the response to that? And so this is a kind of adversarial method of teaching and receiving the Dharma. And this is what Lupo's grown up with. This is what he knows. So he stands there silently. And Jiashan says, a chicken in a phoenix nest, not the same class. Go away. Get lost. Having summoned Luopu, when Luopu shows up with this attitude, he immediately is ready to send him away again. Or is he? Or is this just his way of breaking through? When the ancestral teachers do things that make us, that if we did them, would make us seem like assholes, it's not because they were a bunch of assholes. Again, it's because they're finding expedient means, skillful means, to get through, to break through. And this is Jiashan's way. Notice that Jiashan uses words. He uses metaphors. A chicken in a phoenix nest. You know, quite the put down. Not the same level, not the same class. I remember someone saying years ago, this is a preppy phrase at a school I went to. I was not a preppy myself, but this was a preppy phrase. Not quite our class, dear. NQODC, NQOCD. That was a little code, NQOCD. So that's kind of what Jiashan says. But he also seems to be saying, this is not our way. You're a chicken, and you've come to the phoenix nest. So this scratching and clucking isn't really going to work here. Maybe try something else. Is he sending him away, or is he pulling him in? Maybe pulling him in. And so, what does Luopu do? First, he says he backtracks. I've come from far away hearing about your virtue, leaving out the fact that he spent almost a year not bothering to come by. I've come from far away hearing about your virtue. Please give me one touch. Maybe I was a little hasty. Maybe there's something here for me. Maybe I don't know it all. Maybe my dharma can deepen a little bit more. He starts to open his heart a little bit. And so Jiashan begins to teach him, again with words. So there is the teaching without words and the teaching with words. And he says something that may resonate for you with the Heart Sutra, which we also recited together a little while ago. There is no you before my eyes, and there is no me here. So what's all this about you coming to me and my virtue and your wanting a touch? What's all this you and me? Notice, too, that Luoku has grown up in an adversarial tradition. And, well, what if there aren't two adversaries here? What if there's no you and no me? What does that do to the teacher-student relationship if it's not defined in this very binary way, in this way of self and other? And it's clear to me that Luopu is a little bit thrown by this. He's not expecting this. This is not how they did things in Linji's Sangha. But he goes to what he knows, which is he shouts as though he is back in Linji's Sangha. That's what you do. Cuts! You just shout like that. And that's supposed to get you someplace. But does it really help with Jiashan? Jiashan says, stop it. Right? You're still not listening. You're still not getting it. You're still clucking. You just laid an egg. We're phoenixes here. We do things differently. Don't be so hasty. And then he continues to teach, and he continues to teach in words. Clouds and moon are the same. Valleys and mountains are different from each other. Interesting moment in the koan. If this sounds familiar, it's because this is very close to some verses that come up in a later koan collection, The Gateless Gate. And Wu Men, who's the editor of The Gateless Gate, wrote these verses and maybe was directly inspired by this koan. Clouds and moon are the same. Mountains and valleys are different. All are blessed. All are blessed. Is this one? Is this two? Is there one way of teaching or two ways of teaching? Are these two traditions really just one? And we're getting different emphases. We're getting different flavors, but we're biting into the same fruit. So clouds and the moon are the same. Sometimes all distinctions drop away. Sometimes it's just this. No inside, no outside, no me, no you, no forms, no subject, no object. Just this free fall. This lovely free fall that isn't scary because there's no ground. Just there. Here we are in the place that words fail us. Here we are in that place that Lin Ji points to when he says, open your mouth and you've already betrayed it. I'm quite conscious of betraying this as I try to speak to you about it. It can't be put into words. But mountains and valleys are different. Distinctions fall away, but they still operate. And we come back to them. This is so important. So important to not take the bait that Luopu seems to have taken. To take the bait of thinking that we can dwell in this place of no distinctions, that we can walk up to a great teacher in his own hall and not bow. That's where Lu Pu is stuck. At the same time, still very much caught up in notions of me and you, of self and other. So Jiashan is really turning this guy around. This is a wonderfully compassionate teaching, nasty as it might sound on first hearing. We don't want our teachers to be like Jiashan, or do we? Sometimes we feel dismissed. In our Doksan experiences especially, I think, I know I felt that bitterly, felt bitterly put down, dismissed, not really taken seriously, not really heard. And over the years, I came to see that that wasn't really what was happening, but that I was bringing all kinds of expectations and goals and demands into these interviews with these truly compassionate, wise teachers. And they were just trying to help me out a little, trying to say to me, in effect, a chicken in a phoenix nest. You know, go back and sit some more. Let's see how it goes next time. So this is part of our tradition. To not give our teachers absolute authority. We have an ethics code for a reason, and we remind you of it before every sesshin for a reason. I don't want to suggest that teachers never are assholes and that teachers never do violate their ethical responsibilities. I don't want anyone to think that. But I do want to suggest that a lot of the time we may interpret something as hostile or dismissive or uninterested. That's not. When a teacher really crosses the line, we usually know it. When a teacher just makes us feel like, but that's not what I was saying, that's more our problem than the teacher's problem. All this is swirling in this koan. Jiashan said, "Stop it, don't be so hasty. Clouds and moon are the same. Valleys and mountains are different from each other. Come back to this world for a moment where there are distinctions, where words have meanings, even if imperfect ones, where there is, I took away you and me and now I'm bringing them back. And then it's not impossible to cut out the tongues of everyone on earth. It's not? What does that mean? What does it mean to cut out everyone's tongues? Well, it doesn't mean to literally cut out everyone's tongues. I can promise you that. So what does that mean about one's relationship to the spoken word, to language, to trying to express things in words? He seems to be pointing to where Luo Pu is coming from. And here's our question again. How can you make a tongueless person speak? How can you speak what can't be spoken? How can you express the Dharma and make it yours? I think there's an implication here that Luo Pu has basically just been doing, I'm thinking of another koan, that he's just been copying what has been demonstrated to him again and again in Linji's Sangha. the shout, the attitude, the not bowing. This is all Linji's stuff. And great, it must have worked really well for most of Linji's students. But it doesn't seem to have worked perfectly well for Luo Pu. He seems to be stuck with the appearance of mastery of the Dharma and not with the actual penetration that he thinks he has. He can do the shout, but that's what he heard again and again from Linji and from Linji's other senior students. Can he do something other than that? Can he make a tongueless person, the tongueless person that he's made himself, the person who feels that no words are adequate and so might as well clap the hands or rap the floor with the kotsu or shout or flounce out? Well, what about saying something? What about opening his mouth and bringing something forward? And Luo Pu feels the power of this invitation, feels that he's being offered something that he hasn't been offered before. Again, not because Linji wasn't a great teacher, and not because Linji couldn't offer someone else everything that person needed. But Luo Pu, no. Not in his case. Something didn't come through. And so Luo Pu remains with Jia Shan and becomes his student and eventually becomes Luo Pu's Dharma heir. And so if you look at the lineage charts, Luo Pu is not in Linji's line, but he's in Jia Shan's line, which is a Saodong line, a Soto line, Saodong, the other big tradition that survived, that goes back, goes back to great teacher Shuto, and we read from Shuto today, earlier, the Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage. Very different approach, right? And it was not yet called Saodong, but that was the line, that was the lineage. It would be eventually called Saodong, and then Dogen would bring it to Japan, and it becomes Soto Zen, one of the other of the three streams that flows into Boundless Way Zen. Not, once more, not a story about Saodong or Soto being superior to Linji or Rinzai. Just a story about what worked for Luo Pu. What did he need? And so the question for me, the question for you, the question for all of us is, what do we need? What does each of us need? And do we think that we're getting entirely what we need and maybe like Luo Pu we're not? Should we be open to other kinds of teaching? One difference between our assembly and Linji's or Jia Shan's is that we have multiple teachers. Sometimes that might seem like a pain. You know, well, I was doing great on this koan with this teacher, but then this other teacher sent me back. Well, maybe that was what you needed. And maybe it's an advantage that we have this crazy Boundless Way Zen system where you go from one teacher to another and try to be open. And good to have preferences. Good to form special relationships, which we call shokan relationships. And also good not to close off. Not to be like Luo Pu. At least not like he was at the beginning of the koan. Maybe to be like he was at the end. Luo Pu went to Jia Shan and without bowing, stood facing him. Jia Shan said, "A chicken in a phoenix nest. Not the same class. Go away." Luo Wopu said, "I've come from far away, hearing about your virtue. Please give me one touch." Jiashan said, "There's no you before my eyes, and there's no me here." Wopu shouted. Jiashan said, "Stop it. Don't be so hasty. Clouds and moon are the same. Valleys and mountains are different from each other. It's not impossible to cut out the tongues of everyone on earth, but how can you make a tongueless person speak?" Wopu said nothing. Jiashan hit him. With this, Wopu became Jiashan's student. Thank you. So please feel free to sit comfortably as we move into Dharma dialogue, and we can all stay where we are. And please come forward with anything that may have come up for you. It doesn't have to be something that came up for you during the Dharma talk. Anything at all that's coming up for you that maybe something that this Dharma talk touched on, maybe not. And please don't be shy. How can you make a tongueless song this week? So let's see if we can do that. Yeah, Laura.
Right away as you were reading it, I was really noticing this way that I feel and identify myself a lot in the world of like really feeling like kind of like a body always trying to get my head to go on top. And I hear from a lot of people the opposite, feeling like these kind of floating heads trying to get to connect with their body. And so I noticed like just in me this kind of wanting of the other, like feeling, oh yeah, I probably like the blows and shouts and that, like I identify with that. And I feel like I am always asking like, shouldn't I learn more? Shouldn't I study more? And I'm always getting the same kind of like, no, but I just feel that like yearning of it. And so I really appreciated it. And I still also feel like I don't know how to make a tongueless person like myself sometimes talk. And, can you tell me the answer?
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for saying that about blows and shouts. And we'll remember that during the talk. Yeah, and so wonderful that we hear these stories and we work on koans and we start to find out where we're missing something. We find out what we're quick to pick up on and what we're slower to pick up on, and then then what we're slower to pick up on turns out to be where we need to go, acknowledging you for knowing this, you know, for noticing this. And again, it's not that there's something superior about the body-oriented person or the head-oriented person. It's just some of us are one, some of us are the other, some of us are a third thing. And working with a teacher and working with koans helps us discover which. And then we go exactly for our weak spot. That the weak spot is the sweet spot. Mm-hmm.
You know, I also appreciate what Alan said, how he ended his, or at some point in his talk, he was saying something about, we looked for what we need, right? We go for the difficulty or caution there is that we hang on to that and we think that we don't have it. So when we go for what we need or we find what's missing, then are we open enough to receive and then see what's different? Maybe what we thought we needed isn't. Maybe what we thought was missing isn't. Mm-hmm. Just being open.
Thanks, Laura. Yeah, Brad.
If I have it right, the moon and the clouds are the same and mountains and valleys are different. And at that point, I go, oh, God, you know, here we go. And then he says, all are blessed. And I think if that's right.
Yeah, that's not the koan, but that's Wu Men's verses.
Yeah,
in another koan.
I remember. Yeah. And I just love that moment. Like, instead of the connection. conundrum, the usual conundrum, it's a great blessing. So that really works for me.
Yeah, wonderful. And you know, he could also have said, mountains and valleys are the same.
Mm-hmm.
The moon and the clouds are different.
Yeah.
Right. But is this one, is this two? You know, that's kind of haunting. For me, that's kind of haunting, this koan, because it's hard for me to talk about it without presenting this kind of dichotomy of, well, here's the Linji school, here's the Saodong mm-hmm. school, here's, you know, teaching with words, here's teaching without words, and yet, is this one or is this two? And for me, there's one Zen.
And you said the usual conundrum. Yep, maybe that's the blessing.
Thanks, Brad. Alex.
You know, it feels so beautiful. And what you're saying is that at the end, the teacher speaks in the student's language.
Right.
Hits them. And so there's no, and it's unclear, right, into the future, what type of language might be used in what scenario. And it's really beautiful about also, like, meeting, because we're all sort of occupying different student and teacher roles, meeting each other wherever at, situationally, and that can be shifting over time without, say, necessary precedence over one or the other. Without favor, right? It's easy to favor the sort of verbal poetic teaching, but actually the teacher at the end moves. Yeah,
yeah. Thank you so much for pointing that out, Alex. Because as I read the koan at the end of my talk, I thought, oh, I left that part out, and great that you brought it out. And yeah, so it's kind of sweet in a way that it hits him, because it's like, here, I'll talk in your language for a second, because there's Lil Pu, just, you know, he can't say anything. He's been brought to that state of realizing that he is missed, he did miss it somewhere. So I imagine going all the way back over his earlier transmission, like, wait, where did I go wrong? I thought, but, and then it's like, here, cut, you're home. Yeah. Thank you, Alex. Beautifully said. Anne.
I was thinking a lot about what you do with, like, whether you're a chicken or a phoenix or something, and the way that we sort of kind of, or I could say sometimes, like, I can sort of think, oh, like, yeah, I'm a chicken, but I want to, like, sort of present as the, you know, just that, but then it could be both things. Or just thinking that too, like, as in teaching, how it's this thing where I feel like in remembering, like, oh, you have to also, like, you don't know, like, often the student knows, or there's, like, many different ways to be, as you presented, or schools to learn in, so that's a challenge for the teacher too, to kind of be humble and say, oh, I have to learn from this person in front of me as well. Or that's how I've come to the more experience I had.
Yeah. And to go back to where you started out, you know, you can be a chicken on Tuesday and a phoenix on Wednesday. You know, we're not stuck in one position. And you can be a chicken for October Sashin and be a phoenix for Rohatsu Sashin in December. So keeping that in mind, that we don't, and now this sounds like I'm making a pun, pigeonhole ourselves.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
Okay. And one of the points that I heard you say also, Anne, is that, you know, as far as Jia Chan is also learning in this situation. And I think that's really key. That's one of the things that really comes again, is that it doesn't matter whether Soto or Renzai, the aspect is that this willingness to engage and to continue. So we can't just go sit on a mountain and think that we're done. I mean, we can, but in this case, Liu was kind of slapped out of that a little bit, to think that I'm just done. that somehow I'm gonna have some type of breakthrough at the October Sesshin. I'm gonna see through everything, and I'm done, and I've got it. And I think we're being reminded here, not so fast, not so fast. And this is good news. This is good news.
And, you know, I've never seen a phoenix, but I know what a chicken is, and I've seen many. So, right, so maybe the thing that we think is a phoenix is just a thought, a mind, a construction, and that the real is the chicken.
Thanks, Sandy. And Elle.
How come? Yeah, thank you, Gertrude. How come teaching without words is so often shown as hitting or striking or silence? It's never shown as hugging or just touching. So.
Yeah, well, it's also shown as raising the whisk. You know, it's not like it's some, you know, it's endemically violent thing, process. It can be slapping the floor. As I mentioned, it can be hitting the floor with a katsu. And but why isn't it hugging? Yeah, maybe because that's a little too much.
Or just touching softly.
Well, that actually happens in some of the koans, but it's usually touching very softly with the hosu, with the horsehair fly whisk. That, in fact, we did a koan a couple of years ago where that happens. It's a beautiful moment where because it's very light, you know, so just a very light touch. But it's interesting that you don't, you know, I'm not going to go into a whole thing about, well, there are different cultures and blah, blah, blah. Because there's in our culture, there's obviously hugging, but we don't do it because it does seem to be too much. And it can be misinterpreted, and it can be it can give the wrong message. I don't just mean in terms of moving towards ethics violations, but in terms of what's the teacher student relationship, and it's not really a huggy thing, not during Doksan. I mean, we might hug each other at the beginning or end of Sesshin. In fact, we often do, but it's not a teaching method. So I don't know if that helps, Sam.
Yeah, and part of it, I think that, to get to your question, is that hugs do teach, and you know this already. And if you want to isolate it to simply in this exchange that we have between these two teachers, I think we're missing the fullness of life. Inherent, I think, in your question is that you did not say this, but you've been touched by a hug. You've been maybe woken up by a hug. And it doesn't have to be from a teacher. Could be from a child. Could be from a dying loved one. And having just that touch. We have all been woken up by that. And this is a slightly different way in. Not to exclude the hugs, just because it's not mentioned here. We already know from our own experience the power of a hug.
Dix.
Yeah, you were talking about sometimes going to Doksan and like leaving and being a little annoyed, or like I know sometimes I am. And that's something I've come up against more recently. sometimes, like, I need to be humbled, and that doesn't really feel good. And I think when I first started practicing, it was like, people were like a lot nicer to me in Doksan. And that doesn't happen as much, and so it's just like working with that has been, especially recently, has been interesting.
Yeah, we try to be really nice at first, and
then suck in, and then.
No, I love that you use the word humble, because as you've heard before, you know, that comes from the same root as humus. It's from the earth, and so to be humble is to be brought to ground, is to be brought to earth, is to be reminded that you're standing on the ground and you're not up above it. So this is a great thing. This is why we say that if you want to become a priest in Boundless Ways, then you have to fall on your face at least once. You have to have had that experience of being literally brought. Now, you don't have to literally fall on your face, although it's happened to some of us in this room. But you know, you need to have been brought down publicly. That can be a wonderful experience. Being brought back to just, you know, just this place, and being someone without rank. As soon as we start to think we're getting someplace, then there's a temptation to think we're starting to be somebody, and really we're not anybody. And so it's also being brought back to that fact that none of us is anybody. None of us has any status. None of us is above the others, even if we have certain positions, service positions, teaching positions. Ultimately, we're all people of no rank, as Linji said.
And receiving a true teaching is very often painful. It is. We bring the pain to teaching, but to see that, there's something really precious. It's like a cauldron, but something that forms us, like compressing hot coals into a diamond. Very painful.
That sticks. Marcus.
Yeah, thanks for the talk. I think what came up for me was how easy it is for me to gravitate towards the type of teaching that I prefer, or that I feel mm-hmm. you know, comfortable with or good at, and how difficult it is to turn back on the other opportunities, because it's, you know, it doesn't feel as good or doesn't make as much sense. You know, similar to, you know, in school, you know, favoring the subjects that you're good at, and the ones that you're not, kind of, well, I'm just not good at that. I'm not putting in nearly as much effort, and it how much harder it is to look at the things that are not as easy.
Yeah, and how much more valuable. You know, that you're making me think of that moment where Lopu shouts, and Joshua says, stop it, right? That's what you always do. Mm-hmm. That's what you find easy. Mm-hmm. Let's take you to some place that's not so easy. Mm-hmm. And this is the place this goes back to Lara's point. This is the place we always want to go to. The place we don't want to go is the place that's going to be richest for us. So, yeah, keeping that in mind. Thank you, Marcus. Matt.
Yeah, what you just said makes me think, you know, that shop was probably a genuine breakthrough for him at one point. And then this is so much like you have an insight or something becomes clear, and then it's like, okay, Matt, okay. Mm-hmm. I'll sit on this ledge. I'll be good, you know. And that urge to make it a safe thing, mm-hmm. and an identity or something that we can hold on to. And it's really that constant free dive that is kind of what's called for in some way.
Yeah, right. As soon as we develop a few tricks, we want to keep using them, and that's not, again, going to be all that helpful. This sounds unrelated to what you just said, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm thinking about how at a certain point, you know, people come up to Doksan and they spend a lot of time honing what they're going to say, and then at a certain point they stop doing that, and you know that. Honing what you're going to say, that's going into your bag of tricks. Let me think of a really good trick. I'm going to go in and start the Doksan by saying something, you know, very Zen and very, very clever, or very, you know, something that will throw the teacher, or something that will imply I've had a certain experience. But what about just going to the teacher and bowing and seeing what comes out of your mouth? And that's something that we learn to do, but sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes people pick it up right away.
You know, I'm glad you're highlighting this, because, you know, after the shout, Yanshan just says, stop it. He doesn't say, wrong, get out of here. Just stop it. You've got that. Okay, you got that. Now, what else? And I think sometimes, you know, that can be in Doksan. Yeah, what else? Or just ask the question again. What's the source of mu? Yeah. What's the source of mu? And there is something about that. That ability to be asked. That I see more. Not that I'm going to give you anything, but I see more as the teacher. Come forward. Really, it's such an invitation to go ahead and to come forward. Yeah. Stop that. Now, come forward. Come forward. What else you got?
Thanks, Matt. Corwin, you will be the last.
No pressure. I was just thinking about some of the most memorable times, whether in Doksan or not in Doksan, where I was slapped. Not literally, but in words. You know, and the different types of slaps, too. You know, when I was stuck in a place, it was a thing that I needed. So stuck in a place and something really cryptic was said to me that didn't make any sense until it did. Or the time, you know, that I got yelled at for something and wondered what I did wrong. And it was a different kind of, but it was what I needed. And it was uncomfortable. And I was thinking about it when Bix mentioned, you know, well, when did they stop being nice to me? But it's not like they stopped, but just in that moment, that's what I needed. As painful as it was at the time. And sometimes it just threw me into all kinds of self-doubt and like, what the hell am I doing? But, you know, as Marcus was saying, sometimes we get stuck, you know, we get comfortable in these places that are comfortable. And it's really those other places that, what we need. And, and that's why I always think of slaps, not necessarily as a physical slap, right, but a word.
Yeah, and when, you know, teachers were or are being nice to you, that's what you needed.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like that wasn't what you needed at the time, but sometimes that's what you need. When you start to not get that, when you get that being turned around, being pushed back, feeling the verbal slap or the attitudinal slap, maybe that's a sign that you're starting to figure some things out. You know, you could take that as a mark of your maturing practice, as I sounds like you eventually did. So now everybody's hoping for a big put down in Tokyo. we won't disappoint you. All right, so thank you, everyone. And please resume your upright, dignified posture.